We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry, I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
Pro Football Talk.
I wouldn't listen to some of those people out there, especially guys like Mike Florio.
Mike Florio with Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi on The Score.
Let's talk some football with Mike Florio as we do Wednesdays at this time. He is on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. He is on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose, Parker at apnissan.com. Mike, how are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Good. So what's the story of this Super Bowl that may not be obvious beyond the usual star power, beyond Tom Brady and having this come to Tampa and be in Tampa? What are you looking at that you find interesting?
Well, I mean, we know that it's current GOAT versus future GOAT, and it's number two for Patrick Mahomes. Could have been number three, actually could have been number four if they would have benched Alex Smith for Mahomes back in his rookie year. And for Brady, it's number 10. But you know, what we've seen when Brady has trouble in any game, it's because the pass rush has gotten to him, and he's going up against a very potent pass rush that has the ability to pressure him up the middle with Chris Jones. Oh, and the defensive coordinator of the Chiefs is the same defensive coordinator who was running the Giants defense back in 2007 when we saw how that template works against Brady. And you flip it over to the Chiefs, and it's the same issue. He's got a lot of injured offensive linemen, and Patrick Mahomes may be running for his life with Jason Pierre-Paul, Shaq Barrett, Vita Vea, and Ndamukong Suh. So we're expecting this quarterback-driven shootout. I think we need to watch whether or not one or both of these defensive lines can get home on a regular basis and really make the quarterbacks uncomfortable, which would cause them to have far less of an ability to produce. And I'm not saying it's going to be 13-3 like 2 years ago between the Rams and the Patriots, but those defensive lines complicate things for both quarterbacks.
The top story on Pro Football Talk website is how long will Tom Brady keep playing? So I think that's as good a question as any to ask you, Mike. What do you think?
Well, you know, he had said for years that he was going to play 10 more years. That was his default answer. No matter when you asked him, no matter how many years went by from the first time he said 10 more years, he would always say 10 more years. At some point that shifted to 45, and he'd been saying 45. The year he turns 45, August of 2022, that's his last year of the 2022 season. I think as we get closer to it, and when you look at how well he's playing and how he's done such a great job of avoiding taking the kind of hits that would start that cascading effect of injuries and then you're just done, like Peyton Manning, where he was falling apart physically as he got to the finish line, Super Bowl 55 years ago. I think if Brady can continue to unload the ball, and we saw him do it with Darnell Savage blitzing on Sunday, and sometimes he gets rid of the ball too early. He's so intent on not taking that hit. But if he can keep doing that, the arm's going to be there into his 50s. He could go past 45. He's already defied every law of nature and physics and science and not quite gravity yet. But, you know, the fact that he is where he is at 43 and he's shown no signs of slippage, it makes me wonder, will he push it past 45? And how close to 50 can he ultimately get?
Meanwhile, we heard a weary-sounding Aaron Rodgers in the wake of his defeat at the sprightly age of 37. And it seems like they're cooler heads now, and it's appearing to be less of an immediate crisis in Green Bay, with people saying some things that don't sound quite as dire. Similarly, in Houston, with every day that goes by that we don't hear about actual concrete trade discussions regarding Deshaun Watson, we can imagine that whatever all of the Game of Thrones that goes on back there is conspiring to keep him. Are we going to get the quarterback again that people thought would be coming with so many big names changing teams, or is this going to end up being a predicted storm that just doesn't arrive?
Well, the last word out of Houston, and this came from Chris Mortensen, who's been pretty plugged in on this, was that Watson wants out regardless of who they hire to be the head coach. So that storm is still there. I just think the Texans haven't quite figured out how to engage it. With Aaron Rodgers, I think when you boil it down to what really is going on, he is looking for clarity as to where he stands. Where does Jordan Love fit into the long-term planning? Where does Aaron Rodgers fit into the long-term planning? Is Jordan Love basically another Jimmy Garoppolo who was brought in just in case there's a significant drop, and if there isn't, we'll trade him after a few years? Or is Jordan Love Aaron Rodgers, the guy who sits there for one or two, or in Rodgers' case, three seasons, and then becomes the starting quarterback? And you get clarity from a commitment, and you get commitment from a contract. And we reported the other day that Aaron Rodgers wants a new contract, not because he's greedy, not because he doesn't have enough money, but because from that new contract comes the commitment, and thus comes the clarity. So when you go to the team, as he inevitably will, and raise the issue, as he inevitably will, about the kind of clarity he's looking for and the commitment that brings that clarity, that's when he'll get it. They'll either give him the contract, and look, he's currently grossly underpaid. We have the graphic that we put up on PFT Live, and it's laughable when you see him being paid in the range of Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. And really, the idea that Goff is making $33.5 million a year is laughable in and of itself, but he's making as much as Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers should at least be at 39. That's Deshaun Watson territory, maybe north of that. And again, he doesn't want to come off as greedy, so he's not going to say it. It's more about getting the commitment. You can't trade him. You can't cut him because of the cap charges that would happen in the first few years of the deal. I think he's looking for the team to do something that makes it clear to him that it's not just a year-to-year arrangement until they decide to go with Jordan Love. He wants something that has more clarity. He'll be there for 2021 unless they refuse to give him any clarity, or unless the clarity he gets is, well, we think we're going to go to Jordan Love in 2022, then that's the thing that could force Aaron Rodgers to decide to try to take the initiative. I don't think that happens, but I think that's a potential ending spot, and that's what he means, I think, when he says no one's future here is clear, myself included.
What's funny to me is you could have been talking about Jared Goff during part of that explanation about Rodgers, because Goff has that huge cap hit, and now we're hearing that he might be gone. There's a lot of names right now in the NFL where I feel like we're having the same discussion about whether or not they're going to stay with their team at the quarterback spot.
Yeah, and I think because there's been such an influx of young quarterbacks that can play well right out of the gates, it makes teams more willing to take a harder look at who they have. And that's what the Rams should have done with Goff 2 years ago. I was arguing aggressively, don't pay him. Yeah, he's got 3 years in and the window's open on a new contract. Don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Sean McVay can find somebody else to play just as well or close to it for a lot less money. And they found that guy in John Wolford. That's the guy who, in one of the quietest implicit benchings of all time, took over for Jared Goff. And but for the neck injury that he suffered in the wild card round, it would have been John Wolford playing against the Packers in the divisional round. And I think that kind of angered Jared Goff. But, you know, the Rams are stuck because he's got $43 million fully guaranteed that's due over the next 2 years. There's no offset language on a lot of that money, which means if he gets cut, he gets to double dip. And no one's trading for that contract. There's no one out there who is making their plans for 2021 and looking at all the potentially available quarterbacks saying, wow, we got a chance at Jared Goff. And that just underscores what a mistake it was to give Goff that contract.
There are people saying that about Matthew Stafford, however, thinking that that's the ultimate change of scenery argument for somebody who's undeniably talented, but just because of injuries and supporting cast was never able to make good on his the ability that everybody saw coming out of college. And yet, with all these names you mentioned, And with all of these possibilities, whether it's Garoppolo or Stafford or anybody else, I never hear the Bears connected to them. And I see the odds come out by the odds makers of where the Bears are. They just haven't been talked about realistically as a landing spot for anybody yet. Who's the Bears quarterback next year?
That's a great question. And, you know, would the Lions trade Matthew Stafford in the division? Would the Bears even want a guy who has played his home games in a dome all these years? Would he even want them? See, that's the one big factor in all of this. You don't just blindly trade for Matthew Stafford. Yeah, he wants out of Detroit, but you need to know where he wants to go. He needs to give the Lions a list of the teams he'll be willing to play for, and then they can do the auction from there and see who comes to the table. But my guess is that the Lions are going to not want to trade him to a team like the Bears. Not that the Vikings or Packers would even be at the table, but we're going to find out what the league really thinks of Matthew Stafford. Bruce Arians was gushing about him before the game that the Buccaneers played at Detroit back in December, and the Buccaneers just destroyed the Lions. And Tom Brady, if they would have left him in, would have set the single-game passing record of 551. He would have broken that, or 554, I think it is. It was set in 1951, which is just mind-boggling to think that that long ago somebody threw for 554 yards in a game. But yeah, I don't know where Stafford fits. And if you send Stafford somewhere, it better be at a place that has leadership, because he's never been one to be the Peyton Manning type of a sheriff leader. You need leadership. So I don't know if the Bears have the leadership, either through the coaching staff or elsewhere on the roster, to make Stafford viable. And I don't know if the Bears have figured out what they want to do. You know, Trubisky's going to be a free agent. Do they find a way to do a little bit of a bridge deal and give him another year to continue to develop in the offense as it's been revised by Matt Nagy on the fly? It's you know, there's a lot of choices out there, and I think sometimes having too many choices is a problem, because you never know what to do when it's time to make a decision.
On behalf of everybody in Chicago who always laughs at how his name is said, what's going on with Josh McCown and the Texans, or as they would might possibly say, McCowan, McGowan, etc.?
Well, at least it's not McNown, which brings back bad memories for Bears fans as well. The Cade era, which I don't know, blink your eyes and you missed it, but it was so bizarre that the report came out on Friday that Josh McCown had interviewed with the Texans to be the head coach. And my first reaction, I like Josh McCown, and I think what he did with the Bears was phenomenal. And he helped heal whatever injury it was that Jay Cutler had very quickly after McCown had that great game on a Monday night against the Cowboys and was the NFC Offensive Player of the Week. But he's a great guy, and he's been around the NFL since 2002, but he has no coaching experience beyond high school, where he kind of dabbled on a part-time basis the last couple of years. The idea that anyone would interview him for a head coaching job is an insult to all of the other qualified coaches out there, regardless of background, regardless of race. But, you know, you look at a guy like Robert Saleh, a guy who got hired by the Jets this year and was interviewed by 6 of 7 teams that were looking for head coaches. The only team he wasn't interviewed by was the Houston Texans. And that was one of the two guys that Deshaun Watson suggested the Texans interview. How does Robert Saleh, who's been grinding for 20 years, not get an interview from the Texans, but Josh McCown does?
And it's not Jack like anybody else. Easterby, Jack Easterby, yeah. Jack Easterby. It's right in front of us.
When you put somebody grossly unfit and unqualified in charge of a football operation, he's going to interview other people who are grossly unfit and unqualified for big jobs. And again, I don't mean – look, Josh McCown did nothing wrong sitting for the interview, but I'm astounded that – look, Byron Leftwich can't get an interview. And Bruce Arians goes on and on about how Leftwich is responsible for that offense. He's calling the plays. He's designing the offense. He's working with Tom Brady to get him to blend with all these new players he's gotten used to this season. How does Leftwich not at least get a courtesy interview with the Texans, but a guy who's never coached does? I don't know what the Texans are going to do, but I assume whatever it is, it's going to create an even bigger mess than the one they're already dealing with.
Leftwich can't get his name mentioned on the television broadcast. And I'm screaming it. At one point, they say, you remember the screen pass to Gronk? They blitz. He dumps the perfectly timed,
Scotty Miller was in motion from the left side, and it kind of created a diversion, and then he did the little screen to Gronk, yeah.
yeah, and Gronk goes rumbling down the field and in his way, and I said it to my son. I said, now is when you have where the truck's got to cut away to Byron Leftwich, and somebody on that broadcast has got to get in their ear and say, hey, I'm cutting away to Byron Leftwich. You might want to mention that that's the guy who runs their offense, who calls the plays. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. What is the guy, even at the end of the play that decided the game, when they hit Godwin, I'm like, what does a guy have to do to be credited nationally for the job that he's doing?
You know, that's a great point. And it shines a light on the extent to which we in the media shine a light on these candidates. And the broadcast is the ultimate spot for it. And if anything, the broadcast crews engage in overkill with the folks that they are willing to say, well, he'll be a head coach soon. Well, he may be a head coach next year. Brian Schottenheimer, they were saying that just a couple of weeks before he got fired by the Seahawks as offensive coordinator. So I don't know what more Byron Leftwich has to do to get the attention of the people who broadcast the games. And look, I'm not faulting Robert Saleh for this, but he brings such an emotional and passionate presence to the sideline that it naturally attracts the camera. And I think that put him on a lot of people's radar screens, and it helps that the 49ers defense was awesome last year, and they made chicken salad as best they could this year. But, it's a great point. The owners, people would be stunned to know the extent to which they rely on media to put guys on their radar screens.
Yep, I remember, Mike, one of my friends for years bounced around as a college basketball assistant coach. And he was successful, and he did all different things. But he was kind of one of these survivors that always had a job, but always had to scratch and claw until he eventually got out of the business. And there was a time back in the early and mid-1990s when he said, it doesn't matter, your resume doesn't matter. All that matters is, does Dick Vitale sing your praises on a broadcast? He said, that's it. He said, because so many people just rely on a national broadcast for the last name that they heard, or somebody saying, oh, this guy's definitely going to get a job. Keep an eye on this. He said, that is all that mattered. And I have to think that the major national bully pulpits for the NFL are no different when all these owners are watching and listening to that.
Well, and think about how owners gravitate toward assistant coaches from teams that are doing well right now. And, okay, well, so all of a sudden the guy's a good coach because the team's doing well, and then if he doesn't get a job this cycle and next year the team's not doing well, then he doesn't get interviews. He's not a good coach all of a sudden. I mean, Josh McDaniels, now there are other factors that go into his case, but, you know, the star has faded for him in part because the Patriots' offense has not been very good the past couple of years, but he was the guy at the top of the A-list not all that long ago. And, you know, there are so many qualified coaches who are suited to having an opportunity to be NFL head coaches, white and black. And, you know, we see what the numbers are, and we see where the trend continues to go. And I think when the dust settles on this hiring cycle, there's a good chance there will be 0 for 7 black new head coaches when there are plenty of black assistant coaches who are qualified for these jobs. It shows that the NFL's effort to try to improve the numbers isn't working, and they're going to have to go back to the drawing board and come up with other ways to infuse more diversity into the ranks of the head coaches.
It also just makes me question, you two illustrating so perfectly the process, what is Korn Ferry doing then? Their NFL recommended search firm? What are they doing in this? What is their?
Well, they're setting the table for finalists that the team ignores.
Yeah, they're getting paid for this, millions of dollars in these cases. We hear all about them, and yet they're doing nothing.
This is what I love about the NFL. This is what fascinates me about it. You have these high-level football operations that millions and millions of dollars are invested into to make them as functional as possible. And then most of these teams are owned and operated by monarchies, right? That's what it is. That's what the Bears are run by a monarchy. And we're down to the third generation. And Cal McNair, the prince, is the prince able to step into the shoes of the king? Well, apparently not. He should be the court jester instead. And that's this huge disconnect. And there's no way to bridge the divide, because the owners ultimately don't know what to do, and they don't want to admit to anyone that they don't know what to do. So they'll write a $600,000 check to Korn Ferry to tell them what to do, and they'll talk to 10 different people who will tell them 10 different things, and they'll just listen to the one who tells them what they want to hear and do the thing that they would have done anyway. because for them, it's basically throwing a dart. And that's what's amazing about it. The people who own and operate football teams, for the most part, should be the last ones owning and operating football teams. And that's one of the things I love about the sport.
Lastly, as we let you go, what do you know about this developing story regarding Seattle Seahawks offensive lineman Chad Wheeler, who apparently over the weekend was arrested on suspicion of felony domestic violence, released on $400,000 bond yesterday morning? And the details of this are disgusting and harrowing. He apparently, at one point, after he strangled his girlfriend, went back in before she lost consciousness. He was drinking a smoothie, and he said, "Wow, you're alive."
Oh,
why
God.
Is this guy? Why is this guy free to walk the streets right now?
Well, that's a different question than why he's still employed by the Seattle Seahawks. And we know how it goes for the NFL. It's a sliding scale, and it depends upon what you're accused of. But the better you are, the more likely they are to find a way to say, well, we'll let the justice system run its course, and you know, we believe in second chances, and you know, and then you get farther down on the rank of 53 players, and you're thrown out the door for jaywalking. So that's part of it. But yeah, the criminal justice system sometimes keeps the people behind bars who should not be, who are no threat to anyone, and then others who can put up the bail, regardless of what they're accused of doing, they're able to get out. And that's one of the many imperfections of our criminal justice system.
Well said, Mike Florio. Great stuff as always. We'll talk next week.
Thanks. Take care.
That is Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk. All right, how do I set this up? What can I say? Is that yesterday I was in the car, and my son and I were driving over to hockey practice. And we heard this, and we both kind of did a double take listening to Danny Parkins and Mark Grody. And thought, did he just say what I thought he said? Like, what's kind of going on here? And I thought, what was said, the way Grody reacted to it, you have to have the right sense of humor for this. And it might piss some people off, but I don't care, because it was a classic score moment. It was a classic Danny Parkins moment, like a Hall of Fame. When in fact, there's the Danny Parkins Hall of Fame enshrinement of some kind, this would have to be a part of it, because it's just the essence of the guy. And just don't go anywhere. You're going to want to hear this. You got the score.
Yeah.
You still got a legitimate backup in McCowan.
But you don't
McCown!
Have
why do you, McCown. It's not McCowan.
McCowan.
No!
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The great thing about live radio and having relationships with personalities in live radio is because sometimes you never know when things are going to take a strange turn. And that's why I enjoy doing it, because I don't know the next words are going to come out of my mouth. And I enjoy listening to it, too. And full disclosure, like when this happened, I immediately got into the group text. I text Layla and I text Jay. I'm like, I don't know that I believe what I just heard. And did you go back and, because you said you were going to go track it down and listen to it.
I realized the best thing to do is to just listen to it now.
Yeah, I think so. Let's set this up. Yesterday was, there were a couple anniversaries. It's obviously the 35th anniversary of the Bears winning the Super Bowl. And that's why I had the ill-advised Italian beef incident last night. It was also the one-year anniversary of the death of Kobe Bryant. Don't judge me. Don't you dare. I've made it through the show
just,
this far.
I hear your guilt and fear. Yes. Yes. Yeah. You just said it. It's not, guilt and fear.
I'm still on the tightrope. So I haven't disappeared mid-show yet. So we're not out of the woods yet. So hang in there with me. But it was also the anniversary of Kobe Bryant's death. And on the Danny Parkins show, Danny and Mark Grody talked about Kobe Bryant and unexpectedness. And they veered toward other celebrities. They started talking about Robin Williams as somebody who was just so full of life that you never expected that you would hear the news of that person's demise. And this was the discussion.
Yeah, so I'd say those two were the ones who probably like most stopped me in my track and was like, wait, what? Like, I couldn't imagine Robin. It's so dumb. People say this all the time. My grandma actually just passed away. And
sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, she died like 2 hours, 3 hours ago now at this point. And
what?
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's
sorry,
okay.
Danny.
No, no, it's okay. But I was talking to my cousin before the show, and he was like, "He's like, you know, I never thought that she would die." And I was like, "Yeah, I know. It doesn't make any sense, but like, I kind of felt the same way. Like, I could have imagined my grandfather dying, and he's still kicking it, and obviously very sad. They've been married, had been married for like 65 years, but." I was talking to him, and he's like, yeah, there's some reason, like, I just felt like she was never going to die. Like, she'd be the one who was at, like, my parents' funeral, like, critiquing our speech. And critiquing the food, and, like, giving someone a hard time about this, and then being loving, and, like, reading to the grandkids about this. And we're like, yeah, Bubby was never going to die. And I kind of, like, I never actively had the thought, but it seemed ridiculous that Kobe Bryant would die. Like, that he could die seemed absolutely ridiculous to me.
Right. Like zero chance.
Feels that way. Yeah.
Like if there's
chance.
A metric for death, like there would have been like point whatever chance of Kobe Bryant being the celebrity we were talking about that died.
Texters and Twitchers are calling me a sociopath. What are you supposed to do when your grandmother dies? She's going to turn 90 in April. I'm obviously sad. I'm very sad for my grandfather, who is completely broken up about it. It's COVID times. We got news that her health, she'd been healthy. It was very sudden. My sister drove my mom to Kansas City first thing Sunday morning so they could get there to say goodbye. And I've been helping my dad out because he's got health issues here. And so, like, he can't be alone. And so, like, it's just, you just deal with it. You just deal with tragedy. I don't know. What am I, people are like, you shouldn't be working today. Like, what am I supposed to do? I don't know. And you can't all get together because of COVID, and you can't all fly in and all of that stuff. And so I don't know, man.
You're acting very Parkins on this one. Oh, see, that's hours ago. I don't know what we're going to do about it. I got a show to do today. Graham's 90. This is what happens to old people. They die.
It does. It's sad, but I'm glad she's not suffering. And she wanted to go before my grandfather, so she didn't have to live with that grief. She lived 89 years, 88 and a half of them with basically no major health issues. And she went quickly without pain. That's a blessing and something to be celebrated. I'm obviously sad, and I'm sad that her great grandson, my son, only got to meet her one time, and it was through masks and all that. But like, I'm thankful that he met her and that we have those pictures and that moment of her reading to him. And it's
Danny.
What can you do? What?
Danny, look at me. Look at me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not your fault.
Oh, thank you, Robin Williams.
Danny,
tying it all together.
It's not your fault. It's
thank
not
you.
Your fault, Danny. It's okay.
Thank you.
And if you need me at some point, if this hits you, I'm right here. I am such a good listener. So
it's hit me.
Okay. Oh, it did. This is it. You don't expect...
No. We've had a couple days to prepare for it. It's Tuesday.
Okay.
She's been in hospice for the last like 48 hours. Like,
okay.
You know, but she officially passed away at like 12:15 this afternoon. And Mitch was like, don't work today. Grody can do it. I was like, I can do it too. Like, it'll be fine. But yeah, it's just, I was having that conversation with my cousin about like, yeah, we never thought that she would die for some reason. And it just kind of came around the comparisons between Kobe Bryant and my Bubby. They're just, they're so similar.
It's Kobe and Bubby.
Yeah. Kobe and Bubby. That's right. Kobe and Bubby. I'm obviously sad. I'm very sad for my grandfather, who is completely broken up about it.
I think that's what it comes down to, is the obviously sad part. But it was just like I heard it in Grody's reaction. His immediate reaction, like, yeah, my grandma died just a couple hours ago. Like, he's anecdotally talking about people, and then immediately, not only is it deeply personal, it's something that just happened 2 hours ago.
And
what?
That the Grody reaction. It's just, he was all of us in that moment. And I didn't know that
my grandma actually just passed away. And
sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, she died like 2 hours, 3 hours ago now at this point. And
what?
Dude.
But then,
what?
No. Grody, sorry. Yes. In that moment, Grody was indeed all of us.
Yes.
But it's pretty obvious. And I think we can talk about this. We've all had stuff happen the day that we had a show or like the day that we were supposed to be on the air, and you put it away until you get done with your job that day, and then you have to address it. And you can tell that Parkins is trying to do that, but then Grody with the ridiculous summary later.
Like, right.
You just deal with I've it. Never you just been... deal with tragedy.
Well,
I've
you
never
know...
been more mad at Grody, except in that moment where he's like, my grandma died. Like what? No, Grody, no.
You're acting very like... Parkins on this one. Well, she died a
Am
couple
I?
Hours ago. I don't know what we're going to do about it. I got a show to do today. Grandma's 90. This is what happens to old people. They die.
No. Oh, no.
It's all very, look, it's a very personal thing. Everybody deals with it differently. And I texted Danny and I said, I'm very sorry to hear about Bubby, but also that, and I mentioned to him via text, I said, interestingly enough, Bubby was also nicknamed the Black Mamba, completely coincidentally. And no, nobody knows how that happened. Just one of those weird coincidences that both are
Kobe
nicknamed.
And Bubby.
I don't know what all to right. do, but you know what? What, Parkins?
All right. No, this is perfect.
I'm obviously sad. I'm very sad.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. You weren't obviously sad because you were sitting there talking about Kobe Bryant up until that point.
Yeah, well, you know, I can compartmentalize. Dan, I'm a professional, okay? I don't know. I clearly am mentally imbalanced and not normal. Am I supposed to just sit around with grief and do nothing between 2 and 6? And Mitch is like, Grody can handle it. I'm like, can he though? Can he?
What are you supposed to do when your grandmother dies?
And so I was like, I am taking this afternoon's show off because the funeral is at 3 p.m. And so I will be.
And?
I know.
It's
I will
today?
Be. The funeral is today. I will be attending it virtually with my father, help him out with the technology. And so, yeah, the funeral is today. I can't be there, unfortunately. And so, you know, this is what happens. Life goes on. It's the circle of life, Layla and Dan. What was I supposed to
do? My wife passed away 7 years ago, right? It was a tough day. The sun came up the next day. The world kept spinning. People kept going to work. And that's what we're going to do.
Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer is right there with you. Wife dies, tough day. Yeah, next day, that's going to work.
Well, no, if my wife died, Dan, unless it was a Bears Monday, I would take the show off, okay?
Oh, God.
All right? I think we understand that there are things that are more important than radio shows except on Bears Mondays.
But see, here's the thing, though. I totally get your point about what would you otherwise do if the funeral isn't yesterday. Are you supposed to, would the world be a better place? Would you be happier or would you feel better about everything? And everybody would feel better about you if you dressed in black and rended your garment and did nothing but sit in a dark room and say Kaddish all day? I mean, what are you supposed to do?
It's ridiculous. And if there wasn't COVID and if all of the, you know, 9 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren were getting together, obviously I would take a few days off and be there. But like that's not in the big funerals with air travel from all over the country. Just I don't know if you guys have been reading the news, but it's not exactly in the cards for like-minded, well-minded people. And so, you know. I'll be on Zoom today with my dad. I told Mitch that I would do 4 to 6 today. And I would just
oh,
I would go
did.
Up. Yeah. And he's like,
it.
No,
just
take the whole show off. You need it. I'm like, I guess everybody else thinks that I'm mentally deranged, but I can't even say this is what Bubby would want. She probably would want a bigger fuss being made over her, frankly. But Kobe and Bubby.
It was great, great radio.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Tragedy is kind of.
Grieving is optional, Danny. Just remember that. You were trying to process it. I don't think you were being a sociopath. We all are very sorry. But frankly, I am more mad at Grody in this moment than anything else.
I'm not. Grody, I put him in a situation where he has to. Is he supposed to cry over a woman that I'm not crying over who he hasn't met? Like, that's ridiculous. And so,
my grandma actually just passed away. And
sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, she died 2 hours. That part 3 hours ago now at this point. And
what?
It was the Grody summary that bothered me.
It shouldn't. Layla, it shouldn't bother you because Grody does a great impression of me. Eventually, he will do a great impression of you. And it's
totally.
he doesn't have a malicious bone in his body. And it's I had clearly chosen at that point to try to entertain the masses between 2 and 6. So I provided him an improv prompt, my grandma dying 3 hours ago, and he yes and me. He went with it. He did a
great
job.
You're acting very Parkins on this one. Off you died a couple hours ago. I don't know what we're gonna do about it. I got a show to do today. Grandma's 90. This is what happens to old people. They die.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's true.
All I'll say is
that
I did. Unfortunately, I have attended a Zoom funeral, and it happened to be lovely. It was. There are a lot of people who are now getting, unfortunately, really, really good at doing Zoom funerals and making them meaningful and connective. And it's my hope that you can have a similar experience at Bubby's today. All of us show them.
Thank you, Dan. Don't try to cleanse your soul. You wanted to just make fun of me, and you wanted your TSL and your 15 minutes off of my Bubby's passing too. Because I got it. I get it. I understand. No,
again,
it's
compartmentalize too.
Yeah, exactly. And I appreciate that. No, it's going to be lovely. My grandfather wrote the obituary. He's a multiple time published author, and it was great. And I believe he's going to be speaking today, and so we will be. You know, from all over the country, we will be mourning the life of an incredible woman. And I don't think she would be offended by this segment or yesterday's segment or me working yesterday. I think she would understand. And yeah, man, I live my life on the radio, better or worse, for better or worse. Right. And so everyone's like, I don't know anyone like you. And I'm like, thank you. I don't know what to say. But honestly, like, if you're not going to the funeral. Am I going to leave the show in Grody's hands? We have an afternoon ratings battle to win. Okay, I can't let that happen. I'm too competitive.
Thanks for being a good sport, man.
Thanks, guys. Love the show, by the way. You guys are sounding great.
Thank you, sir. Right back
Thanks,
at you.
Danny.
Thank you.
I'm sorry,
Danny Parkins, part of our afternoon show. From that, we are going to go to the Midday Midway. Two words: exploited monkeys. Next on the score.
My wife passed away 7 years ago, right? It was a tough day. The sun came up the next day. The world kept spinning. People kept going to work. And that's what we're going to do.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
Well, we've been busy today. Like I say, sometimes the red light goes on and you never know where this thing is going to go. But we started out talking about Hall of Fame and just sort of our ennui regarding all of the process and procedure and the hand-wringing over it when it's not really at all about baseball anymore. And Craig Calcaterra talked all of the baseball stuff with us. Mike Florio had a wide-ranging football discussion, and then we revisited the unique aspect of yesterday's afternoon show when Danny Parkins joined us as well. I don't have to say much more other than we like when local news does our Midday Midway work for us. I give you ABC 7 New York.
Costco is reportedly removing a type of coconut milk from its shelves after the overseas suppliers were accused of using monkeys to pick coconuts. PETA says it was in talks with Costco about forced monkey labor in Chalka coconut milk products. PETA says Costco cut ties with the company after hearing from thousands of concerned shoppers. PETA says a lot of people choose coconut milk instead of cow's milk because they don't want to support the cruelty of animals. PETA did an investigation in Asia and found terrifying young monkeys in Thailand that were kept chained, abusively trained, and forced to climb trees to pick coconuts that are used to make coconut milk and other products.
Okay, where do we start with this? Do people I thought coconut milk was just the stuff inside a coconut, that it wasn't an alternative to milk that people I heard that about almond milk and soy milk. I didn't know that this was a milk alternative for people who didn't. And is it cruel to milk cows?
I don't know that it's cruel to milk cows. I have used coconut milk in several different milk alternative situations, but only because of the taste. Not actually because I don't drink certain kinds of milk. I pretty much eat drink most stuff, except for things that taste bad. But yeah, coconut milk is definitely a milk alternative and a sneaky amount of saturated fat, people. Look it up. It's not always better for you. And I know that whole good fats are good for you thing, but still.
And there's something about the coconut oil.
This is on your mind today.
Remember the coconut water craze? Don't start with me. This is half of this battle is mental. There was the whole coconut water craze, and there's something in coconut, and like every once in a while, if I'm sitting in Cabo, I'll have a pina colada just because, you know, when in Rome, but I don't seek it out. But something stays with you in that weird way. So I couldn't like pour coconut milk over my Fruity Pebbles.
Yeah, probably. It's just processed, kind of like almond milk is. You grind up the flesh of the coconut and then part of the coconut water, which does have natural potassium in it. And then you have a milk alternative. But I was like, oh, the coconut, the milk, the monkeys get to pick the coconuts. That sounds cool. But then you hear the end of the audio and you're like, they're terrified? This sounds awful.
How do you know they're terrified?
These poor monkeys.
How do you know they're terrified?
You know, like when an animal is in distress, like it sounds like they were chaining them and not feeding them properly and abusing them. But at first I had this really great mental picture of like these coconuts just hanging in the trees and these monkeys just happily picking them. And of course that can't be the case, Dan.
Picking them, throwing them down to each other, playing around, making little sculptures out of them. I don't know. But when we start, isn't that a slippery slope? Like, who or what animal would do more actual labor, literal labor, than a hen? If they're actually laying eggs, like doing the work to squeeze out eggs, and then you're just sort of taking them and you know, frying them up, is that forced labor?
Well, that's another question now, isn't it? I did think about this, though. Goats are way more efficient than people a lot of the times when it comes to knowing how to landscape.
There are airports that have brought in teams of goats. There are a lot of there are public lands that there are people who wrangle goats to be used to eat unwanted vegetation or invasive buckthorn and other aspects. So there are goats that'll seek it out. But I don't think that's forced labor if they just want to eat. You're just feeding them, and they're just wandering around eating.
No, it's a goat partnership. The idea is to have a partnership, or like. There's a big story in Texas many, many years ago, probably about 10 years ago, where all these spiders got together at Lake Tewakene. This is terrifying because they finally figured out that if they actually organize, we're screwed. So all these spiders at a lake in East Texas got together somehow and decided to build a huge, huge web so they could catch more bugs together. And it worked. And apparently people found out about it because this web spanned something like multiple yards and you could hear the mosquitoes screaming.
Ooh, I'm there for that.
It was awesome. I hate mosquitoes. Julio loves the midday midway drop. We see you, Julio.
Yes. So they actually realized that they could create sort of a communal web. And then how did they decide which spider got to go suck the juices out of which mosquito at what time? Was it just there were so many of them?
Yeah, yeah. See, this is my biggest fear, is that the spiders will realize at some point that if they all get together, they're way more effective. Like, these spiders did it. They knew what to do. In fact, I used to have a bit of a pest problem at a house in Dallas with my ex-husband. I'm like, hey, what are we going to do about this? And I'm like, well, we could just call those spiders at Lake Tewakene and see if they'll come over and build the web. He's like, I don't think that's how it works. But wouldn't it be kind of cool if it was?
But the way you phrased that made it sound like the pest problem was your ex-husband.
Oh, well, yeah. Probably a Freudian slip.
That is the midday midway that we do many days right around this time. Hub Arkish will talk football next, NFL, Super Bowl, Bears coaching openings. He'll also take your calls as well. 312-644-6767. Bernstein and Rahimi on the score.
Molly and Hall, Chicago's number one and most listened to sports morning show, period.
I voted for Curt Schilling, Omar Vizquel, Billy Wagner, Scott Rowland, and Andrew Jones this year. They were mostly things that were steeped in war and wins and all these statistical data and analysis that you painstakingly go over. I'm sick of the morality discussion. I don't want to go down that road, Molly, because I think that's a dangerous path to go down.
Molly and Hall, mornings 5 to 9 a.m. on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.